Hello, and welcome to the Advent AM podcast, Risk and Business, the first one of 2025. Where are the years going, I ask myself? Well, what year 2024 was for the industry? The cybersecurity sector demonstrated resilience with a 13% increase in annual revenue. That's nearly £12 billion. And this led to the creation of 2,700 new jobs, underscoring the industry's expanding economic contribution as well as its contribution to the protection of UK PLC. Showing the importance of all of this, we also saw the launch of the UK CSBR, dedicated to driving thought leadership in cybersecurity and business resilience, influencing future policy and legislation. And of course, we will be contributing to this through the advisory board, and we'll be having a CSBR podcast in the spring, so be sure to look out for that. The year also saw a rise in sophisticated cyber threats, including quishing, as if we didn't have enough ishing going on. That's QR code phishing, and ongoing and increasing hostility from nation states. So a busy time. That was last year, but what's the year ahead going to bring us? Well, to answer that, we've got some of the Advent IM team here today. And we're going to be briefly discussing what we believe are the key things to look out for in 2025. So with me today, I've got Ellie Hurst, our Commercial Director. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Mike.
Dave Wharton, our Delivery Director. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Ellie.
Hi.
And a Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners. So straight into it then, Ellie, where do you think the key issues, the key things for us to look out for in 2025 are going to be coming from?
I think one of the things that I'm most interested in seeing developments in is going to be around ransomware. Ransomware has been a topic that's been in the news for a number of years, but I think the way that it has evolved over the last few years has been astonishing and very, very quick. So we've seen it move into supply chains and infect entire supply chains. The number of ransomware families seems to have decreased, but the ones that we've been left with are extremely potent and very well fit for purpose. So, you know, for a number of years, Mike and you and I know, we've been talking about the legitimacy of paying ransoms.
Absolutely.
You know, should it be, you know, should it be allowed really? When we're in a situation with, you know, a physical ransom, you are not allowed to pay a physical ransom. You are not allowed to pay any kind of a payment to an individual or an organization or a nation state that's under sanction, for instance. But what happens with ransomware obviously sort of flies underneath all of that. Yeah. And causes absolute devastation because it's siphoning money away from legitimate organisations and sometimes out of the public purse into these shadowy organisations that have links to terrorism and organised crime. And so for me, some of the developments that I saw happen over sort of 2023, 24 have been really interesting around ransomware. And I see a sort of a sea change and a movement towards, if not an outright ban, but certainly a lot more rigor around paying ransoms. So, you know, the guidance from NCSC has always been clear. Well, okay, it wasn't clear initially, but it became clear. So well done, NCSC, which was, you know, yeah, probably best not to. But, you know, in last year, you know, the government started considering some mandatory reporting of ransomware attacks, I think particularly for those organisations that are, you know, part of critical national infrastructure or who are, you know, suppliers to critical national infrastructure, given the fact that, you know, supply chain attacks frequently, actually, that is the end target. It's the soft underbelly that gets exploited in order to try and reach critical infrastructure. That seems like, you know, a very sensible thing to do. The year before, and obviously, you know, sort of moving into it was, I think it was at the end of 2023, moving into 2024, and the UK signed the Counter Ransomware Initiative, the CRI, which was a joint statement discouraging ransomware payments, and UK government pledged not to use public funds to pay for ransoms. Obviously, it's still quite hard to police that one. But yes, you know, so things I think are moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But
it's,
I think
very grey as well as to where you draw the line on the definition of use of public funds. When, for example, it's somebody in government or the public sector supply chain who have had the incident and they're paying the ransomware, but without doubt, the money they're paying the ransomware for is coming out of the money that's being paid to the contractor to deliver the service.
To deliver the service, exactly.
Coming from the public purse.
Yes. And so that's a good point. So if you look at it then from the criminal side, the organisations that they go after, you want an organisation that is too critical to allow downtime. So, you know, the NHS is a perfect target, also perfect target because, you know, it would create public outcry. And also because they're paid up in the past. So they stand a good chance that they may pay again. And also because they have a fragmented reputation when it comes to their cyber robustness, that it's perhaps not as consistent or, you know, I don't want to appear critical because, you know, I don't have to manage it, do I? So it's fine for me to sit here and criticise, but there is a certain reputation that goes along with that, which, you know, to a criminal makes them very, very, very appealing. So if you're in a similar position within your sector, you're dealing with vast sums of money, you've perhaps got not a great perception when it comes to your security, but you are seen as critical, and if you are taken offline, it would cause a huge amount of disruption, makes you really, really attractive. So I think, coming back to your question then, I think 2025 hopefully is the year that we start to see some progress, some real guidance, and some real structure around how we deal with the evolving threat that is ransomware.
And I think there's an ongoing naivety as well about what you get when you pay ransomware, when you pay up. And I was actually in a meeting where the statement was made that, oh, well, our supplier has paid the ransom, so they're not going to misuse our data now because that's against their business model.
Of course, because, you know, double and triple exploitations haven't happened in the last couple of years at all, have they? Of course.
Yeah. And these ransomware gangs are really worried about their reputation of being reputable emailers, aren't they?
So, it's brand, isn't it? You know,
yeah. But I think the preparedness part of things as well for organisations is going to be key for 2025, isn't it? I think, you know, yeah, if they bring legislation in about the paying of ransoms, then there has to be that preparedness put into it as well. We're still working with organisations now that aren't really equipped for a ransomware attack. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, in an ideal world, it's like, we've, you know, our databases have been encrypted, they've been locked out, we can't access them, or woe is me. It's all right, we've got backups, you know, and we know those backups work because we've done the testing and we've done the restoration of our data and our IT systems, and it works. That's the utopia, as we know from experience. Yeah. That's far from the truth, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of organizations, again, are naive about just how resilient they are and also how prepared they are for recovery.
Or thinking that they're not going to be a target. That's another one.
Yeah.
Why would anybody be interested in us? Like,
Well, of course, nobody would want to target a medical laboratory supplying life-saving services to the NHS in London, would they? And of course, I think we would be remiss if we didn't at least start to squeeze into this podcast a little bit of a discussion around AI, Dave.
I'm quite happy to talk about AI. So, I mean, in terms
of... Because that's the panacea, right? That's going to solve all of our...
Well, apparently it is. I mean, it's certainly going to help the that the criminals out there develop better ransomware, I think. But yeah, no, I think two of the things that I'm looking at and tracking for 2025, one from a personal point of view, which is the AI side of things, although that obviously does cross over to my professional world, but also kind of cloud computing and the return to on-premise computing by organizations. But yeah, I mean, AI is an interesting one for me. I've always been a bit skeptical, and I'm still very skeptical. I can't say the word skeptical. I'm still waiting to see real good benefits from AI, other than, you know, being able to generate, you know, nice images and things like that, or, you know, help, you know, write an essay for a university thesis. But yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, and there is a lot of talk out there about the big AI, the AI bubble bursting. And right. And whether or not actually it's just a fad, you know, it was only a few years ago, you know, right up until 2022, we were talking about big data, and the cloud still as well. You know, and that was, you know, big data was going to change the world and everything else. And then you know, ChatGPT was released around about October, November 2022 time, and all of a sudden that's where everybody's focus shifted. And I don't pretend to be an expert in the finance world of investors and founders, company founders and things like that, but there's definitely a pattern being followed that's followed previous bubbles that have burst. The dot-com bubble, when it burst, that AI seems to be following a very similar path. In fact, yeah. the head of the United Nations only last year, you know, warned that big tech is recklessly pursuing AI for profit. And you know, OpenAI themselves, when they first founded, you know, said that they started out as a non-profit for the benefit of humankind. How very quickly all that changed from a benefit perspective. I think the revenue for OpenAI in 2023 was around the 2 billion mark, which was part of a smaller, you know, much smaller piece of big tech investment, around 240 billion. So we are talking vast sums of money here. And I liken it to some extent as well to, I mean, in our little, my own little world of security and cyber, is the cyber buzzword bingo that we play. You know, yeah. Cyber was very much the word you used if you wanted investment. It's commonplace now, but actually now we're a bit more mature about it, and we can make the difference between cybersecurity and information risk management and information security and things like that. But I see AI has been a bit like that as well, in terms of it's kind of, well, we want some investment. How are we going to raise that investment? Oh, I know. Let's start talking about AI.
So, yeah, all those sort of less sexy but really important areas of security, like governance, risk, compliance, assurance, exactly. Audit. Are all getting swept up under cyber. And even, you know, I've noticed this, when you see cybersecurity frameworks and cybersecurity standards now, yeah. Maybe 10 years ago, they would have been very technical focused. Now they're encompassing all of the stuff that we've traditionally thought of as being non-cyber, because they are non-technical, but actually are fundamental to getting the technology right.
Yeah,
and that's what we're seeing, I think, with the AI as well, is that we're rushing into the technology once again, and we're not doing the governance, risk and compliance well. We're not thinking about the information properly. We're seeing numerous challenges now around OpenAI and copyright and intellectual property and even defamation and slander cases coming through. And examples of ChatGPT making things up in order to please the requester, yes. Because the answer wasn't there, so I'll create it for you.
Yeah.
But it's interesting what you say about the rush to profit, because it, and this is me being a first generation entry into the tech world back in the 80s, but it puts me in mind very much on a parallel of what happened with the World Wide Web. And mm-hmm. you know, so Tim openly says that if he'd been able to see and predict how the World Wide Web would be usurped and how it would be manipulated and used for profit and how it would be used as a force for evil in some cases, then he probably would have designed it in a very different way. But very much the philanthropist at the time wanted it to be open for all.
And that's how AI started as well. But as I said, it's gone down the big tech. Big tech have grabbed hold of it. You know, they've used it, as I said, to pursue profit, and that can only be to the detriment. I think, you know, I mean, there's even one significant tech leader who encouraged or called for a 6-month pause on the development of AI while secretly working on their own AI products. Which I think is disgraceful.
Astonishing, isn't it?
I have to say though,
Mike, that I absolutely love the idea of an AI making things up because it wants to please you. Having a needy sort of codependent AI just makes it human, doesn't it, really? I love the idea of that.
I said my wife would say that's what she's got a husband for. So but that's another story. But, it is though. I mean, you know, for all its, I mean, we talk about, you know, for many years we've talked about garbage in and garbage out and all that sort of thing. But I think that still applies true now. You know, we've got all of these models, these large language models that, you know, that are sucking up all of this data and being used to, you know, to train AI systems and AI models, but it's not always right. I mean, you know, we've got Apple Intelligence came out in December. You know, people waited a long time for it to come, and you know, even as little as last week, you know, the BBC was still complaining to Apple how it was taking BBC headlines and creating, you know, false information. You know, Rafa Nadal was gay, according to Apple Intelligence, and Luke Littler won the World Darts Championship before he'd actually won it. So, you know, it's not infallible. It can be good, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure elements of it will be, but there's a long way to go yet. And I think without the investment from big tech, if that bubble does burst, will it carry on at the pace it has so far?
Well, it's predicted like AI, Dave.
I was just about to say, Dave, it just reminds me, you know, when you were talking a few minutes ago about big data and how we went through everybody was talking about big data and everyone was warehousing huge amounts of useless data in the pursuit of better business intelligence, because they genuinely thought that if you saved everything, you know, you would be able to. And then everybody realized actually that they didn't actually have any tools to be able to analyze it, and they couldn't afford data scientists to be able to get anything out of it anyway. So all they'd done was actually just create another attack service and something else that they had to store somewhere. And then everybody kind of went a bit quiet and wandered off and did something else. But
that's it.
But also they're continuing, and this is, you know, 30 years of my experience, and you would think we would be learning our lessons a little bit by now, of continuing to run these as technology programs, not information programs. And so what we end up with is a new piece of technology sitting on top of a dustbin full of trash.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That I've just looked down at my notes and I've just seen something the New York Times published a little while ago. It seems like I'm going to town on big tech, but it said big tech is bad, AI is worse. There's definitely some truth about sitting on that pile of garbage.
Well, you know, we do see that quite often though, don't we? A big garbage back end and a nice shiny front end.
And of course, wrapped around that, of course, we're seeing further advancements in the world of facial recognition and the challenges that poses to privacy and citizen rights. And already seeing stories of police forces wanting to use AFR built into their body-worn video. So, you know, we face the premise in the next couple of years where we'll have police officers with their body-worn video on all the time, whilst also doing a facial recognition scanning of everyday people going around everyday business.
Which has significant privacy concerns. But again, I think, you know, if the technology is right, those concerns can be allayed. There will be mistakes. That's inevitable. You know, humans make mistakes. Technology is going to make mistakes. But I think that, you know, there has to be an acceptance of that in pursuit of the better good. You know, for want of a better way of putting it.
Well, it's reducing those mistakes to an acceptable level and challenging the potential for bias in all of these systems as well. Coming back to AI, but when you introduce bias into your machine learning and then you rely on that for decision-making, and then you introduce that decision-making into law enforcement, you start to get into a very difficult and uncomfortable position, I feel.
Because we're talking about definitions of our social contract, aren't we? You know, what are we prepared as society, as individuals within society to accept? You know, we accept policing, we accept being governed, we accept all of these things, but there is a certain unspoken level. And if that feels, I think, breached by people, then you start to see some, you know, really major pushback.
Yeah. And, you know, even the last Surveillance Camera Commissioner, Biometrics and Surveillance Camera Commissioner, as it is now, in his annual report, highlighted that the concerns for privacy and the maintenance of citizens' rights being undermined by the increased distribution and usage of these technologies. But we want safe streets, right? So can we balance privacy with safety and security?
I mean, yes, we can. I think, you know, and you know, or at least we have to try. I mean, it's probably a subject for another podcast, but I think, you know, is privacy actually just a myth now? Does it really exist? But no, I think, yeah, we technology is and can be a force for good if it's used in the right way. And and if it does make our streets safe, if it does keep people safe, then we've got to try. We've got to do that, because, you know, we can't, you know, the investment, it just simply isn't there to have, you know, 1,000 bobbies on the beat, or, you know, at any given nighttime in any given town in the country. Wow. It's just not feasible. So we've got to use technology to fill that gap. And yeah, you know, it comes at a price.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, to wrap up today, we have got an unprecedented level of uncertainty in the geopolitical landscape right now as well. Notice on the news just this morning, France coming out very vocally and stating that the EU will defend Greenland from any hostile takeover by the United States.
And so it should, yeah.
But when we have the president-elect of a country like the United States saying that they're prepared to take other countries by force, we really have got into surreal and, dare I say, Black Mirror territory, haven't we?
I think we have. And just to take that a little step further and not really relate to security, I see there's been a bill submitted today in the US to change the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America.
Where will it end?
Where will it end? And again, just sorry, Mike, just coming back to kind of my, you know, the second thing I was going to talk about, and that's the, you know, are we now looking at the end of cloud computing and certainly infrastructure as a service, you know, and hyperscale computing in the cloud? I think there's definitely some steps, and we've seen it with our clients as well, as actually there's a preference now for on-premise infrastructure rather than cloud infrastructure. One, because of the cost. And two, because like I said, the benefits are just not materializing in the way that was perhaps expected, as you know, as little as 6 months ago, but probably a little bit further, you know, a little further than that.
Yeah, was cloud really another emperor's new clothes?
I mean, potentially, I think for some organizations, and you know, we worked extensively with one central government department for a number of years. It was, you know, a good solution, particularly, you know, when you're looking at, you know, performance peaks throughout the year for computing, but for those that have got a steady state, then yeah, there's a real discussion to be had there around the, you know, the cost side of things, and, you know, versus maintenance and security and everything else, and actually whether or not, you know, the public cloud services are worth that level of investment. Yeah. Now
and maybe, of course, coming back to our previous comments about the US, but pretty much cloud is owned by the US, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And that does make people uncomfortable, understandably. I think also the tendency to think that, you know, because everybody's doing it, therefore it's right for everybody, does happen a lot, and makes it feel as if, you know, this is ubiquity. This is what everybody's doing. This is what, therefore there's a cloud for everyone, or there's a whatever it might be, you know, insert whatever the service is here kind of thing. And that it's simply not the case.
an over-reliance on some of these technologies can be dangerous as well. And, you know, I noticed last year over in the States, they called out Microsoft as a threat to national security.
Yes.
In part because of the heavy level of dependency on their technologies, yeah. but also they had several high-profile data breaches. And, you know, I mean, you only have to look at Microsoft and CloudStrike and the pandemonium that was caused as a result of that tiny yes. change.
Yeah, yes. absolutely.
So we need to be careful that we don't put all of our eggs in the same basket sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
But I think when it comes to cloud computing, as you've just highlighted, Mike, you know, that with the big kind of big four tech companies that, you know, they have got the monopoly on cloud computing,
yeah.
you know, from a Western perspective, certainly.
Mm-hmm. But you think about where the messaging comes from as well, you know, where do people find out about these things? Mm-hmm. You know, where do businesses and organizations discover these things? They discover it in the press and the media. And, you know, who has the best PR, who can afford the best PR, so therefore who controls the message.
Yeah.
So that'll be Elon then.
I'm sorry, I don't know who you mean.
And that in itself is scope for a whole new podcast, the manipulation of the political landscape by high net worth individuals.
Indeed, yes.
I think I might be getting my hair done that day, Mike. I'm not sure I want to get involved in that one.
Well, yes. There you go. How to pack a maximum amount into a short space of time. But we've talked about supply chain resilience. I mean, we've talked in the past, is it a supply chain or is it a supply ecosystem? Let us know. Ransomware and the rise of ransomware and whether we should be paying these criminals for their efforts. The bursting of the AI bubble. Is it all just one big tech con? Interesting question posed there by Dave. Surveillance and privacy. And again, Dave posed the question, is privacy just a myth? Is it possible to have privacy anymore? Geopolitical landscape, the rise of America and its monopoly on our data storage and cloud. And yet we've seen some very big high profile returns to on-premise in the last year. So is this the state of things to come? Many thanks for joining us for our first podcast of 2025. Remember, you can always get in touch with us and let us know if there's a topic you particularly want to hear about or something that you particularly want us to discuss. Remember that you can find all of our podcasts on our website and we're on all major podcast streaming channels as well, including YouTube. So for now, Happy New Year. Let's see what 2025 actually brings us. And don't forget to keep checking back for new episodes of the Advent IM podcast, Risk and Business. Dave, Ellie, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye for now.